The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider. I just wanted to tell you I'll be away for a bit on vacation, but my terrific colleagues and friends at EWTN Radio will be preparing a Best Of series in my absence. So sit back this weekend and enjoy a special listening adventure. I think I have a fun offering for you. I'll call this segment Inquiring Minds Want to Know, because I'm going to bring you some trivia, some little-known and often unusual facts about the Vatican. Only two states in the world have officially square flags, Vatican City State and Switzerland. However, the flags become rectangular when they're hung together with other flags, such as at the United Nations or, as you will often see at Catholic churches, when the Vatican flag and the flag of the country are placed side by side in the sanctuary. The Vatican flag is a square banner divided into two equal parts, yellow or gold towards the flagpole and white, which has as its center the Vatican coat of arms, the crossed keys surmounted by the tiara. Supposedly, it's the flag that breaks the rule about European flags. White and gold must never be used because white and gold symbolize metal. Since the 14th century, the two crossed keys have been the official insignia of the Holy See. This is embossed in gold on all Holy See passports. The gold key on the right alludes to the power in the kingdom of heaven. The silver one on the left indicates the spiritual authority of the papacy on earth. The symbolism is drawn from the gospel and is represented by the keys given to the Apostle Peter by Christ. Above the keys is the triple papal tiara formed by three crowns, symbolizing the triple power of the Pope to teach, govern, and sanctify. There have been other interpretations for the triple crown. For example, the three crowns represent the church militant, church suffering, and church triumphant. And now some trivia about flags. Vexillum is Latin for flag or banner, military ensign, or standard. Vexillology is the study of flags. By the way, I did once get a question for the Q&A segment of Vatican Insider, and it was about cleaning a papal flag. Here's the question and the answer. I fly a papal flag at my home. It's in great shape but needs a cleaning. Can it be washed or dry cleaned? I got in touch for this with some experts at crwflags.com. To summarize what I was told, it seems that the United States, more than any other country, has actually codified its flag etiquette in much more detail than has been done elsewhere. While other countries have not been so detailed, including, it seems, Vatican City, a flag should always be fit to function as a representation of its entity, be that a country, a state, or an organization. It should be clean and should not be flown if it has stains, rips, holes, and the like. It is preferable to wash flags in warm, soapy water, separately from other items. Just soak it, hand wash it, and voila, you can rehang it. So that's it. Once it's dry and ironed, if ironing is needed, either rehang the flag or fold it and put it away with as much respect as you would when lowering it from the pole. By the way, if a flag must be hung outside at night, it must have a spotlight on it. And now, a little-known fact about the floor in St. Peter's Basilica. Friends who visit St. Peter's Basilica without a guide have often asked me what the markings mean on the basilica's stunning marble floor, the bronze inserts in the very center of the main aisle. With all the beauty and the gigantic size of the basilica, it's amazing that people even notice these bronze inserts, but they are important. To give the visitor some idea of the size of St. Peter's Basilica relative to other major churches in the world, Catholic and non-Catholic alike, there are inscriptions in bronze that indicate the size of the world's largest churches relative to St. Peter's, the largest of all. The rectangles on which appear the bronze inscriptions are about a yard wide and 6 or more inches high. The name of each church and where it is located are in Latin. Most are easy to understand, and the length of that church is inscribed beneath the name. The measurements are given in meters. A meter is 39 inches, so just over a yard if that is your measurement. St. Peter's Basilica is 186 meters in length, or 611 feet. St. Paul's in London holds second place at 158 meters, or 518 feet. Third place goes to Florence's Duomo at 149 meters, or 489 feet. Fourth place, Sacred Heart of Jesus in Brussels, Belgium, 459 feet. And fifth place, Washington's Shrine of the Immaculate Conception at 456 feet. Of the just over 30 inscriptions on the floor, three of the final four belong to U.S. churches. Holy Cross Cathedral in Boston at 338 feet, Our Lady of the Angels in Los Angeles, 332 feet, St. Patrick's in New York City at 331.6 feet. Interestingly enough, only 6 centimeters or 2.4 inches separate the last two American basilicas. By the way, the red periphery disc close to St. Peter's Basilica entrance was taken from the old basilica and is the stone on which Charlemagne and other emperors were crowned. Another question. Did you know there's a German cemetery in Vatican City? The Teutonic Cemetery is in Vatican City between St. Peter's Basilica and the Paul VI Audience Hall. Vatican City State's website tells us that it is the oldest German establishment in Rome. The entire area is surrounded by a high wall, but even a rushed visitor will quickly be drawn by the charm of this plot of land so rich in history. In ancient Roman times, Nero's Circus was found here, and it was the site where many Christians were martyred. The cemetery was founded around 799 when Pope Leo IV presented the land to Charlemagne for a school. It is beautiful and peaceful and well-kept, almost charming, if you can use that word for a cemetery. In the 15th century, it became dedicated to the German-speaking residents of the city. There are two institutes of study and two chapels attached to the cemetery, one being the burial place of the Swiss guards who fell in defense of the city against the forces of the New Kingdom of Italy in 1870. In another and more famous battle involving Swiss guards, the so-called Stand of the Swiss Guard took place during the sack of Rome on May 6, 1527, when the Pope's Swiss guards held off troops loyal to the Habsburgs long enough for Pope Clement to escape. On that day every year, May 6, the new Swiss guards are sworn in during a colorful and historic ceremony in Vatican City. May 6, 1527 was a very sad day for the Swiss guards, the most infamous, in fact, in their history. Here's what happened. The Vatican and the Papal States were part of the faction that opposed the Habsburg dynasty in the 1520s, an opposition that led to war when Pope Clement VII appealed to France for aid. The Habsburg army, composed of imperial and Spanish troops, was placed under the command of the Constable of France, the Duc de Bourbon, fallen from grace in France and now serving the enemy. As a result of his troops' attitudes, Bourbon decided to attack Rome, a city considered to be the inviolable capital of Christendom, but was almost defenseless. When the Pope anxiously ordered the citizens to take up arms, only 500 obeyed. Bourbon's troops quickly overwhelmed the defenders and began to plunder the ancient city. Near St. Peter's Basilica, the Swiss Guard, as the Pope's elite bodyguard unit, deployed. The captain, Caspar Roist, intended to hold off the attackers long enough for Clement to escape across the Passetto di Borgo, a long fortified wall that links what today is Vatican City State with Castel Sant'Angelo. Joined by remnants of the Roman garrison, the Swiss had made their stand in the Teutonic Cemetery within the Vatican. Captain Roist was wounded and later sought refuge in his home, where he was killed by Spanish soldiers in front of his wife. The Swiss fought bravely, but were immensely outnumbered and almost annihilated. Some survivors, accompanied by a band of refugees, fell back to the basilica steps. Those who went toward the basilica were massacred, and just 40 survived. This group of 40 managed to stave off the Habsburg troops pursuing the Pope's entourage as it made its way across the Passetto to Castel Sant'Angelo. Such a tragedy for the Swiss guards. Now, moving in time to more history about the Teutonic Cemetery in the Vatican. The holy year 1450 brought many pilgrims to Rome. The cemetery and the church were in bad shape at the time, but both were soon rebuilt. In 1454, the German members of the Curia formed a special confraternity that still exists today and is now called the Archconfraternity of Our Lady. Given its special location, the Teutonic Cemetery has always received many requests for burial. In February 2015, Willie, a homeless Belgian man, was buried in the cemetery with the financial assistance of a German family after approval by Pope Francis. The Pope had reflected on his own maxim that he wanted a poor church for the poor. According to the statutes, those who have a right to be buried here include members of the Archconfraternity, members of many religious houses of German origin, and members of the two German colleges in Rome, the Anima and the Germanico. The cemetery is open to all visitors to Vatican City, and visitors come most often to find the graves of famous people of ecclesiastical, artistic, political, or diplomatic backgrounds. Now, the final piece of trivia for the day is the story behind the icon of Mary on the facade of the Apostolic Palace. I've been asked quite often about the mosaic of Mary that is located fairly high up on the exterior of the Apostolic Palace overlooking St. Peter's Square. Many have noted it did not seem to fit in with the architecture of the building. In fact, the Apostolic Palace is a complex of buildings with over 1,000 rooms and halls that date from various historical periods, many of which are, however, from the Renaissance. The mosaic is indeed more modern and has quite a lovely story. For the story, we enter St. Peter's Basilica and walk down the left aisle to the very end, where we will find the Chapel of the Column. Over the altar in the Chapel of the Column is an image of the Blessed Virgin painted on a column from the old basilica. In 1607, the image was placed on this altar designed by Giacomo della Porta and was framed by stunning marble and priceless alabaster columns. On November 21, 1964, Pope Paul VI bestowed on this image the title of Mater Ecclesiae, Mother of the Church. John Paul II had a mosaic reproduction of it set on the external wall of the palazzo facing St. Peter's Square. St. John Paul's motto, Totus Tuus, All Yours, is on the mosaic. Early in his pontificate, he had ordered this mosaic to be made because he had always wondered how on earth Mary, whom he dearly loved, was not among the 140 statues atop the basilica facade and the monumental colonnades that were designed by Bernini. When he was shot in St. Peter's Square on May 13, 1981, the Pope credited the hand of the Virgin, his mosaic Mary, with deflecting the bullet that would have killed him.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
EWTN has just been a godsend for me because I've learned more about my religion since I started listening to EWTN about 5 years ago than I ever found out in school. And I love the Catholic Church. We have one of the biggest, best gifts in the whole world.
The EWTN on-demand platform features 50 new podcasts every week, as well as an ever-expanding library of audio and video content. For Catholics who want to learn more about their faith, simply using their mobile device, computer, or TV, your favorite EWTN programs are available 24/7. Visit EWTN.com and click On Demand. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
When we pray, we should talk to God. It sounds simple. It's not always that simple. It's just like making any conversation, though. So sometimes we need prayer starters, things that'll give us a boost and get the conversation going. The formal prayers we have in the church, like the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be, even the Creed, all of these things are ways that we can begin to talk to God. God doesn't get tired of hearing us say the standard prayers of the church. We can begin there.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome to the interview segment of Vatican Insider. I've called this segment Inquiring Minds Want to Know because I'm going to bring you some little-known, unusual, and very, very interesting facts about the Vatican. If you live in or have visited Rome, you may have noticed that the facades of many churches feature one or more coats of arms above or near the main entrance. These signal one of two things, or possibly both. The crest or coat of arms might be that of a pope who has visited the church and said Mass, and or might be the coat of arms of a cardinal whose titular church it is, be he living or deceased. Papal coats of arms are the personal coats of arms of popes and have been a tradition since the late Middle Ages. If a pope came from nobility or a family that had its coat of arms, often that was used. Today, when a bishop is named, he designs a coat of arms. If he becomes a cardinal, he usually keeps it, and the same if he became pope, although he might tweak it in some manner as a sign of what he intends his papacy to be. The last pope who was elected without already being a bishop was Pope Gregory XVI in 1831, and the last one who was not even a priest when elected was Pope Leo X in 1513. Papal coats of arms are traditionally shown with an image of the papal tiara and the keys of Peter as an external ornament of the escutcheon. That's what you and I would call the shield. The tiara came into use with Pope John XXII, 1316 to 1334. Benedict XVI, however, changed that when he became pope in 2005, placing the episcopal mitre in place of the tiara. Pope Francis has maintained that. Adding the keys behind the shield came with Pope Callistus III, 1455 to 1458. The two keys, gold on the right, crossing with silver on the left, are said to represent the power to bind and to loose on earth, silver, and in heaven, gold. The gold key signifies that the power reaches to heaven, and the silver key that it extends to all the faithful on earth. Pope Francis's coat of arms has the tiara and two keys, and on the blue shield are a gold star representing the Virgin Mary, the grape-like plant, the spikenard, is associated with St. Joseph, and the IHS emblem with the symbol of the Jesuits, which of course is the Greek word for Jesus. My favorite papal coat of arms story is the one about John Paul's coat of arms. I have been told that when he was elected, John Paul called upon Archbishop Bruno Heim, one of the world's leading authorities on heraldry and coats of arms, to help design his crest, personally proposing a blue shield with the golden cross for Jesus Christ and a golden letter M for the Blessed Virgin Mary in the lower right quadrant. Archbishop Heim explained that the rules of heraldry state you can have a letter or words around the shield, but never on the shield. This was a rule that had to be broken, according to the new pope, who would have none of that for his beloved Mary. In 1978, Archbishop Heim had written in heraldry in the Catholic Church that letters of the alphabet should be avoided as heraldic charges, but he supported the letter M in John Paul II's coat of arms because Polish heraldry has frequent inclusion of letters. His motto, which accompanies his coat of arms and expresses his devotion to Mary, is the simple Latin expression, totus tuus, totally yours. It's from the well-known words of St. Louis-Marie Grignon de Montfort, in whom Carol Wojtyla found a guiding light for his life. I belong entirely to you, and all that I have is yours. I take you for my all. Now, I want to tell you about the Paschal candle, which, as you know, every year in every church is placed next to the altar throughout Easter until Pentecost Sunday. But can anyone tell me what's on the candle? What do the symbols mean? Used during Easter time, the Paschal candle is an immense candle, often up to 5 feet high, in a large and unusually very ornate holder. It's blessed during the Easter vigil, and smaller candles are lit from this. For many centuries, people used to bring a lighted candle to their homes to light the hearth fire. The candle symbolizes the light of the risen Christ, who comes in glory to dispel the darkness in our lives, thus overcoming death. It is usually adorned with the cross. At the top of the upright beam is the Alpha sign, and at the bottom is the Omega. These are the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet and symbolize Christ, the first and the last, the living one, as we read in Revelation. They also indicate that all time belongs to Christ. 5 pins are placed in the candle, usually at the end of each beam and in the center, to signify Christ's 5 wounds. And very often in the 4 angles created by the upright and cross beams, there are the 4 numbers of the current year. This candle is customarily lit at Mass throughout the Easter season that ends on Pentecost Sunday. After the last liturgy on Pentecost, the Paschal candle is moved to the baptistry, and from its light, the candles of newly baptized infants are lighted throughout the year. Now, on to a new topic. I'm always being asked about Vatican City, what it's like, what can people see, etc., so now's the best time to give you the capsule version. Did you know that Vatican City State is a state? A very small but sovereign nation whose head is the Pope. I say small, as it's 108.7 acres in size, and I've been told that's the average size of an 18-hole golf course. As a sovereign state, Vatican City has its own coins. The euro is the monetary unit, and its own stamps and passports, but only for diplomatic personnel such as the Secretary of State and similar officials or members of Vatican delegations to international conferences. But as you can see in the name, it's also Vatican City, and as such has whatever you'd expect a small town or large city to have: government, a police force and fire department, a medical center, pharmacy, gasoline stations, a grocery store, post office, department store, and, no surprise at all here, a number of churches, including the obvious St. Peter's Basilica. There are no schools in the sense we understand the word, but there is a pre-seminary school for adolescents and young men possibly considering vocations. Most visitors to the Vatican know only the top attractions seen yearly by millions of visitors: St. Peter's Basilica, the Vatican Museums, and the Scavi, the pre-Constantine excavations under the basilica, where the bones of St. Peter lie in repose. But visitors usually can't access other services. The stores, medical center, post office, and gas station are accessible to bearers of special photo IDs issued by the Vatican: current Vatican City and Roman Curia employees, retired Vatican employees, and some members of embassies accredited to the Holy See. Goods bought at the department store, grocery store, and gas stations are sold at very favorable prices because there is no VAT tax, and that's about 21%, added to Vatican goods. License plates for Vatican cars start with SCV, Stato della Città del Vaticano, Vatican City State. Locals, of course, say that SCV means Se Cristo Vedesse, if only Christ could see. One of the least known and most amazing institutions in the Vatican is the celebrated Mosaic Studio, where a very small number of the world's finest artisans repair basilica mosaics, recreate paintings on a made-to-order basis, or execute mosaics commissioned for other churches throughout the world. The Mosaic Studio boasts a history of almost half a millennium. Its most basic task is to check and restore the 10,000 square meters of mosaic in St. Peter's Basilica. Since 1847, every papal portrait found in St. Paul's Outside the Walls Basilica has been done by the Vatican's mosaic workers. Often, pieces they produce are given by popes as gifts to visitors or when they travel. Papal preferences include reproductions of the Christ, of the Niche of the Palliums in the Vatican Grottoes, Salus Populi Romani, the image beloved by Romans, in St. Mary Major, and even a dove for peace. The artists execute works on commission for sale to the public or works commissioned by other church institutions throughout the world. The studio's pride is the invention of smalti filati, hair-like filaments that are produced when the fine sticks of enamel are exposed to intense heat. Once, with special permission to visit the artist's workshop, I watched in silence and awe as one of the craftsmen, using this smalti filati technique, created the eyelashes of a Madonna. Her eyes were so full of life, I waited for her to blink. This particular technique, using some of the 28,000 colors cataloged by shades in an immense series of drawers, allows the artist to reproduce with such breathtaking accuracy details like eyes and eyelashes, folds in garments, strands of hair, the veins in a leaf, the petals of a flower, or even wrinkles on skin. Now, let's go from a city to a bridge. Do you know which of Rome's bridges is the oldest, and how did it get its name? The answer is the Ponte Sant'Angelo, or the Bridge of Angels, perhaps Rome's most beautiful. The Roman Emperor Hadrian, who built Castel Sant'Angelo as a mausoleum for himself and his family, also built Hadrian's Bridge, facing straight onto the mausoleum. The bridge was completed in 134 to span the Tiber River from the city center to the newly built mausoleum. The bridge is now solely pedestrian and provides a photogenic vista of Castel Sant'Angelo. During the medieval period, it was sometimes called the Bridge of St. Peter, since it was how most pilgrims crossed the Tiber River to get to St. Peter's Basilica. In the 17th century, Pope Clement IX commissioned new statues, assigning Gian Lorenzo Bernini with the design. There were to be 10 statues of angels, but each would be holding something special, an instrument of the Passion of our Lord Jesus Christ. Two original angels sculpted by Bernini himself for the bridge are now in the Church of Sant'Andrea delle Frate in Rome, not far from Piazza di Spagna. It's really easy to miss if you're not looking carefully. The average person probably sees beautiful angels. But sure enough, all the angels are holding objects related to the suffering and death of Jesus. A crown of thorns, a spear, etc. For centuries, this was the only bridge linking both sides of the Tiber. It was the main access to the Vatican for the first Jubilee in 1300, and there were so many people crossing that the city fathers divided the bridge into two pedestrian lanes, one to Vatican City and the other back to the center of Rome. Thanks for tuning in to the Best of Vatican Insider while I'm on vacation, and thanks to my EWTN colleagues and their hard work in preparing this week's program. Come back next weekend for another special listening adventure.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.